little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
If you look at the bottom of page 6, there's a paragraph there which actually isn't in any of the published Calgary-Cambridge frameworks, though clearly mentioned in their book, and ought to be, because consultations start before they begin, don't they? They start with a preparation phase, and both parties may be prepared. So ideally, one of your difficulties, Prem, was the fact that information that you could have that would have facilitated a better consultation wasn't available. It just physically wasn't available. Sometimes it's available and we haven't read it. So it's ideal to be prepared as well as possible in terms of updating ourselves with any, you know, clinical continuation notes that our colleagues may have made, or correspondence or test results. You know, the clinical data that might be available to us since we last saw the patient ourselves. It's a difficult one, that, isn't it? Because time is very tight in our 10-minute consultations, and I was quite a fan of sort of glancing to make sure that I knew it was there, but not reading it in detail for two reasons. One, because frankly, time is very tight. But two, sometimes if you read too much of someone else's opinion, it can start to blinker you what you're facing. So there's an interesting tension between approaching the patient's opening remarks with a very open mind versus making sure you're aware of the existence or indeed absence of key data that should be available. Do you think that's a sensible suggestion? You can disagree with anything I say, and of course I'm making sweeping generalisations here. Yeah, I'm making some sort of sense. All right, good. Now, the environment matters, does it not? In America, primary care doctors are much more white coat, desk, stethoscope, something stuffed in the pocket. They claim the badge of status in a different way than primary care physicians in the UK. There is just a culture, isn't there? GPs have a sort of an envelope. We don't wear a white coat. My very first ever trainer in 1983, who was just about to retire, wore a short white coat. And he's the only primary care doctor I've ever seen in a white coat. So, you know, we've got a style that's slightly different from secondary care doctors and different from American primary care physicians. So the way we look matters, but the whole environment, you know, we tend to create we don't sit over desks, do we? Round corners or alongside, so that's the GP way, isn't it? A little bit of a prop for the patient, but not too much of a barrier. Try and make sure that, a lot of people fail this test, but it's quite good to make sure you can get out of the door faster than the patient, if you need to. Do you fail that test, Keith?
It's 50-50. We're about the same distance from the door, so okay. I could probably manage it.
Yeah, so you just make sure...
I'm fitter than most of them.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it?
I think I can jump out of the window before...
Yeah.
There needs to be an access.
Ground floor, hopefully, yeah.
So, well, you know, these things matter, because if in the back of your mind there's any concern about your security, there's a little bit of you that's not concentrating properly on the patient. So getting the environment so that the doctor is as relaxed as possible, and likewise the patient is, helps both parties to bring as much cognitive attention to the task as is reasonably to be expected. Yeah?
That's a lot more difficult on home visits, especially if you have like a fear of animals or something. I have a bit of a dog fear, so that can be quite distracting.
Yeah. Well, it's perfectly rational, you know. Who thought it was a good idea to have wolves in people's homes? It is. That is right. And I think it's slightly harder as a trainee, isn't it? Because... If you're lucky enough, it's a nice thing about being a partner in a practice, you have your own room, and, you know, I know the layout, and that does induce a degree of comfort in relaxation. I know which drawer stuff's in. It's like cooking in someone else's kitchen, isn't it, when you're moving around all the time. All those little things are on your mind, and they reduce your ability to focus.
This is one of the things that's worthwhile mentioning from the point of view of doing the CSA exam, is that it isn't your own room. There is a little bit of you going out of your comfort zone.
Mm.
So it is worthwhile practicing in a similar environment with similar mock situations where you've maybe got a camera in the room, or you've maybe got an observer in the room, so that you get used to that's routine. It's just part of the way that I've been practicing ready for this situation.
Yes, without doubt. Yeah. Absolutely. So. And you know, I think, this is one situation where I would also seriously consider taking... Has any of you, you know, done the going to London thing? And what was your verdict?
So it was very much about getting to know the room and how the process works.
Yes.
That course. Rather than necessarily a CSA revision.
Yes.
But it does settle you down. You walk in, you go, oh, I'm in the pink room.
Yeah.
Or the, you know what the noises mean. it helps, I think.
Yeah.
The other thing to note is the slang and the way they approach doctors is entirely different from the areas here. The Northeast has got a slightly different way of approaching doctors. They seem, their London ways are a little bit different as well.
Oh, it's London ways, is it?
Yeah, the patients are mostly around London areas. So.
The most recent CSA, they had, I've got Lyme disease, doctor. Doesn't even exist up here.
Yeah. Well, nobody has any knowledge of it.
You can get it in the, you know, in the foothills, but it's much more of an issue in the New Forest or the Southwest. Yeah, it's a very middle class preoccupation, Lyme disease as well. So those sort of wealthy suburbs near to forested or heathland areas.
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusing.